Hurricane Sandy, the superstorm of 2012, will be one for the record books in numerous categories, for flooding, rainfall, and its impact on human lives and business. In Manhattan, the epicenter of American trade book publishing and much other media besides, the days without power and communications are taking their own silent toll. Welcome, everyone, to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. My name is Christopher Keneally, host of Beyond the Book, and every week on Friday, we turn to the writers and editors of Publishers Weekly for a look at the week ahead, a preview of news that everyone in publishing is talking about. Joining me today from his home office is Andrew Albanese, the magazine's features editor. And Andrew, from your home office, I think that, you know, that pretty much tells the tale.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're mostly fine, you know, here, life and limb-wise, where we're okay. There's no real tragedies to report in the publishing business, but there are lots of tragedies unfolding here, especially as I'm sure you've seen on the Jersey Shore and in places like Breezy Point, Queens. And, of course, the lower third of New York City is still without power, including the Publishers Weekly offices, which is why only I'm joining you today, and Rose Fox is unable to be with us. We just weren't able to pull everybody together. I think right now the focus probably necessarily should be on people's lives and taking stock of what we're witnessing. But we can definitely say that the impact on bookstores and the publishing business and on book sales is probably going to be pretty severe. And in the most lucrative bookselling region in the nation, no less. You know, consider this fact that the population in New Jersey alone that has been without power over the last few days is equal to the population of several of the western states combined. And it's not only the brick and mortar sales that are going to be affected from any regions. There's also not going to be ebook sales either, as both internet and cell service has been cut in a lot of regions. As you may have noticed, the Publishers Weekly website was even down for a little bit, but we've got that up and running, and it should be fine now, functioning fine now. And on the Publishers Weekly website, we have a list of what publishers and retailer statuses are, and we hope to keep that list updated. And also on Monday's issue, we're going to have a roundup of how stores and retailers in the area are coping and what the impact of the storm may mean for them, both in the short term and in the long term. I have to say my big fear is that some of these stores that were just sort of hanging on in some communities that were hit by Sandy now, that could be a fatal blow for them. Certainly, I hope that's not the case. And let me just personally say that I'm hoping everyone who's affected by the storm is, you know, safe and sound. And let me extend for myself and for my colleagues here at PW our very best wishes. And let's hope everyone is coping with Sandy okay.
Right. Well, you know, obviously here at Copyright Clearance Center, we can add that sentiment and just say that likewise to those listening in areas affected, we wish you well and hope for a speedy return to something called normalcy. And, you know, the point you make about the impact on the sales of books, both in the real world as well as the virtual world, I think is a very important one. And I heard a story this morning regarding insurance. And the notion is that certain kinds of damage is covered, but flooding, for example, is usually not covered by insurance. So that bookstore scenario you describe, it really could be a death blow.
That's true. And you think how many bookstores in the Northeast have flood insurance, or really ever thinking about being hit by a hurricane, of all things. So that could certainly be a really big issue for a number of these stores. So we're crossing our fingers for them.
All right. Well, there is some good news in this storm, and there is going to be one ray of good news is there's an issue coming out on Monday. Tell us more about what's been happening at PW.
Yes. So we are planning to publish an issue on Monday. I know the staff is as scattered as we are and as stranded as some of us may be. There's still no public transit in a large part of the city, and the internet is dodgy, but we've been working away. And if I can shamelessly self-promote for a moment, I'm really proud of the way our staff and our leadership at Publishers Weekly has managed this crisis so far. Despite many of us having no power and very limited communications, we've all managed to keep working, and we've managed to keep in touch. As I mentioned before, some of you may have noticed we had a short website issue for a while, but that's been straightened out. You know, and personally and professionally, it's been pretty gratifying, I have to say, despite all the logistical challenges, that we are going to get an issue out on Monday. Now, there still may be some challenges in getting that issue to every battered mailbox and as quickly as we usually might, but we're going to get it there. And, you know, that we've done this with no power, with our offices being out and dodgy internet and all of this, you know, it's kind of a source of pride for us, or at least for me, I can say. And ultimately, if I can risk getting a little corny here, I think it's a reflection of just how much the PW staff is personally invested in our work. And for many of us, as it is for many of you in publishing who are listening, I know we kind of live for this. We live for books. So there really is very little separating our personal and our professional lives. So the fact that we're going to get an issue out on Monday is encouraging. I'm happy about that.
Indeed, a reflection of the professionalism there at PW, and certainly the way that many of the media in the New York area have continued to carry on and cover this story is certainly a testimony to their perseverance as well. So the news does march on, obviously, and this week's news is the merger of Random House and Penguin. We talked about it as a possibility last week. This week we learned it is a certainty, and there's been some bit of mirth out there imagining logos for Random Penguins and Penguin yeah. Houses, as we discussed. Tell us more. Where are we with this story?
Yeah, that was fast, wasn't it? You know, it was just days ago, you know, we were talking about the rumors of a merger. And then it came down this week that the deal was actually done, that Random House and Penguin will indeed merge. So we're not sure that it's actually a certainty at this point. There's probably a few things that can go wrong. But you can read all the finer details on the PW site. But for now, let's just, you know, to paraphrase Joe Biden, let's just say that this is a big effing deal. And I, for one, I'm very curious about what happens next. You know, how the deal comes together is another thing. But, you know, in the short term, it's going to be business as usual for both these houses. And the deal is probably not likely to be done until later next year at the earliest. And still, they'll have to get final approval of government regulators. We know how that's been lately. But, you know, I'm really kind of looking about how things are going to unfold in publishing, you know, beyond this deal. You know, my first question is, now that Random and Penguin have decided to merge, who's next? You know, a look at the publishing history suggests that, you know, these kinds of deals don't happen in a vacuum. You know, and right after the merger was announced, rumors began circulating that News Corp was considering making an offer for Penguin. You know, they were going to try to buy Penguin right out from underneath this merger. Penguin CEO John Makinson quickly stepped in and said, no, the Pearson board is committed to the Bertelsmann deal with and the Random House thing is going to go ahead. But, you know, what the News Corp rumor suggests to me is that, you know, other major publishers are maybe not quite comfortable with the size of their new competitor. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see another major deal coming among other members of the Big Six in the coming months. Also, I have to wonder what this means for Penguin's scheduled June trial with the DOJ over price fixing. You know, I think it's now a done deal that Penguin settles this rather than fights it. You know, clearly for them, all eyes are on the future. And this bit of nastiness with the DOJ, it needs to be over. You know, Random House, I'm sure, wants no part of that fight. And remember, you know, the DOJ produced emails at one point in which Penguin officials apparently lobbied Barnes & Noble to punish Random House for not joining the agency switch. So no need to relive all that at trial, I think. That's a hatchet best left buried at this point. And if Penguin does decide to settle, where does that leave Macmillan? Do they choose to continue to go it alone? So as of now, Penguin says they're preparing for trial. But honestly, you know, there's no upside to that court fight. And there's a ton of potential downside for the new company. So I expect that to end.
Well, Andrew, just remind us about the potential size of a combined Penguin and Random House. How much of a market might they control at that point?
Well, everybody, the estimates have been between, you know, 20 and 25%. Some people have said, some booksellers have said that it's up to a third of, you know, the checks they write every month. So that would be a large company with, you know, sales, combined sales approaching some $2 billion a year.
And what's the timeline on this?
I think we're looking at this probably getting done sometime in 2013. But with government regulators and a couple of other things that might happen here, you never know how quickly it's going to go. But you can check. All that stuff will be updated regularly on the PW website. And we have some initial timeline stuff written. But, you know, the deal was announced and then the storm hit. So the communications have been a little dodgy. So we haven't been able to keep up as much as we would have liked on that. But you can certainly check out the Publishers Weekly website next week for more.
Right. And so I guess we can expect one less large booth installation at Book Expo next year.
You know, that's a very good point. You know, that makes me think about the workforces in general, because usually when mergers like this happen, you see a lot of duplicate jobs that are cut out. And eventually it leads to sort of a leaner, meaner workforce, you know, when you merge these two companies. companies. But I do wonder if we're going to see an expansion here in the short term, at least, because there is such an opportunity with digital. So you could see some duplicate jobs of these two companies lost as they integrate, you know, together. But you could also see, you know, now that they've scaled up in size, that there might be more investment in the digital side, and that could lead to some jobs being added. Probably will. So it'll be interesting to see how the jobs shake out in the coming years.
Here at Copyright Clearance Center and your offices there at PW, we're watching, obviously, a number of legal cases involving copyright in one way or another. And we've talked about one that just came before the U.S. Supreme Court and they managed to get a hearing in this week on a case that involves the first sale doctrine.
Yes, amazingly, just ahead of the storm on Monday, which was October 29th, the Supreme Court did manage to hear oral arguments in the much anticipated Kurtzang versus Wiley case, which is a case that could decide once and for all, at least on the legal side, whether the long-held first sale rights under the Copyright Act apply to goods that were made overseas. Now, I had a chance to listen to the oral arguments, and you know, while it's unclear how the judges may be leaning, it was pretty clear from their questions that they are really very focused on the larger effects their decision might ultimately have, including whether a ruling for Wiley might harm secondary markets or incentivize manufacturers, including publishers, to move their operations overseas in a bid to control further downstream distribution. You know, as we discussed last week, Monday's arguments addressed the fallout from the 2011 ruling in which Kurtzang, a Thai-born U.S. student, was successfully sued by Wiley for importing and reselling in the U.S. foreign editions of Wiley textbooks that were made for exclusive sale abroad. In its verdict, the Second Circuit in New York ruled that Kurtzang could not avail himself of the first sale doctrine because that law says that products must be lawfully made. Now, the Second Circuit held that lawfully made limited first sale specifically and exclusively to works that were made in the U.S. And that's raised alarm bells for a number of businesses, including libraries and the used book trade and online sellers like Amazon and eBay, and also for consumers who, if the Second Circuit definition of first sale is upheld, they may no longer be able to resell legally purchased goods, whether that's books or cars, electronics, anything that has copyrighted components in it. Now, publishers have, you know, dismissed those concerns as extravagant and hypotheticals. But at the Supreme Court hearing, that parade of horribles, as they called it, was very much on the minds of the justices. Now, you can read my full report on the Publishers Weekly website that will tell you all about what happened at the hearing. I have to say, it's a long report, but it's very interesting. And I'll just emphasize one thing that was brought out in the testimony, and that's the U.S. attorneys who were amici to this case. They were, you know, brought on to talk about their position. Apparently, they were trying to broker some middle ground here. But at one point, Justice Alito put it right on the line, and he asked Malcolm Stewart, the U.S. attorney, what the government would find a worse outcome. The horribles that might arise from limiting for sale to U.S.-made goods, like Kurtzang supporters and attorneys contended, or the potential impact on the market from unregulated imports, as widely contended. And Stewart didn't miss a beat. He said that the government would, you know, if it were to happen, would surely prefer, more or less they would prefer Kurtzang's opinion. He said that they would rather avoid sort of the parade of horribles that were listed and they would deal with the other things. And that's important, I think, because even if the Supreme Court rules one way or another, we're likely to see this wind up in the legislature. We're likely to see this first sale wind up in the legislature. And I think the U.S. attorneys who advise Congress sort of tip their hand as to how they're feeling about matters.
Well, that's an interesting point, Andrew, because, you know, copyright law is the purview of the U.S. Congress, and that is often really where these things all end up getting clarified. And we'll have to wait till after an election and, of course, after the decision by the Supreme Court to learn whether we might be seeing some important changes in copyright law.
Yeah, I think if there was one thing that came out of the Supreme Court hearing is that the law is very generally and very vaguely written, and it probably could stand to be clarified.
Well, indeed. Well, Andrew Albanese, thank you for joining us this week, the week of Hurricane Sandy. From your home office there, Andrew Albanese, PW Features Editor. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure, too. And again, let's hope everybody's coping well out there.
Indeed. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.